I think everyone can agree that donating to charity is a wonderful endeavor. In addition to getting to help your community or contribute to a cause you believe in, donations often come with the additional incentive of being deductible on your taxes. And we all love a write-off, don't we?
I know I certainly do. And I'll tell you who else loves write-offs, the ultra wealthy. They're always looking for ways to reduce their taxable income. And there are a ton of legitimate ways to do just that. And one of those ways is charitable contributions. Now, we know the laws on this, Tom, and there's a non-quid pro quo law that is in effect here. But the tax deduction in exchange for the charitable contribution is not necessarily considered a quid pro quo.
Right.
Now, there's plenty of shysters out there that don't mind reducing their tax burdens in some not so legal fashions. And that's, of course, what this podcast and what today's episode is all about.
So today you're going to hear about Michael L. Meyer, a crooked attorney who marketed a scheme called the Ultimate Tax Plan. Sounds like something on TikTok. Michael and his co-conspirators held seminars for financial tax planners, wherein they claimed to be able to get their clients enormous charitable deductions without the clients ever needing to actually relinquish use of their quote-unquote donation.
Well, we're going to talk about the law and what the law says on that, because we do have to qualify that word donation. It's got to go in air quotes, because these donations were not real donations at all. So when we say the so-called ultimate tax plan, it's not a legal tax planning strategy. It was an abusive tax shelter, and it gives a bad reputation and name to legitimate tax planners all over the country.
You're listening to episode 38 of Tax Crime Junkies. We're calling this one Charities, Tax Shelters, and Crimes. Oh my.
Welcome back, everyone, to Tax Crime Junkies. I'm your host, Dominique. I'm a CPA, certified tax strategist. I have a degree in law and lead the American Institute of Certified Tax Planners, and I have an interest in true crime. And with me today is my co-host, who's oh so lovable and also interested in true crime, Tom Gorzinski.
Hey, Dom. I'm Tom Gorzinski. I'm an enrolled agent. I've been admitted to practice before the U.S. Tax Court as a non-attorney. I'm a tax instructor, and like you, I have a real interest in true crime. We decided to create a true crime podcast to combine our love of mysteries, whodunits, and tax. We are the Tax Crime Junkies.
All right, so let's get into it. Starting with the who. Who is Michael L. Meyer? Well, he is not a character in a horror movie, but this will sound like a horror movie to anybody who understands tax. When we look at his criminal indictment, which we'll get into later, Michael was a resident of Evansville, Indiana, up until about 2015. At that time, he moved to the Southern District of Florida. Was it because Michael could find more wealthy targets for his scam? Maybe. He was licensed to practice law in Indiana and Kentucky. He claimed to be a certified public accountant. He also claimed to be a certified valuation appraiser and have a master's and bachelor's administration, otherwise known as an MBA. Although some of those credentials, you'll see, are fraudulent.
We don't know exactly how or why Michael started making a dishonest living through promoting the ultimate tax plan, but we do know he started around 1999. Now, let's set the stage here a little bit. I want you to imagine being a tax planner, which Dominique and I both are, right? So that's not hard for us, right?
No, not at all. Let's see. How does a tax planner feel? Well, we love tax. We love saving money. We love doing good for our clients.
And we love doing it legally through court-approved strategies.
Yes, there's nothing better than coming up with a really good, sound tax plan design. And sometimes, Tom, that can include using charitable deduction strategies. But none of that is worth it if you have to look over your shoulder constantly, or if you're worried about going down the same path that Michael L. Meyer went down.
So as a tax planner, you want to make sure your clients are getting as many deductions as they are legally eligible for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a ton. There's well over 1,200, 1,500, even 1,600 different strategies. And of course, each one of those ideas can be used in combination with each other. But the problem is that it can be really hard to stay in the know because tax code is complicated. So to really understand about every single thing that the tax code allows really requires a very robust education and a commitment and an investment in your business. And so that's why tax planners like us, Tom, we don't sometimes attend seminars or training. We constantly attend seminars and training. And that's because we have to stay educated so that we can better serve our clients. And not only is the tax law constantly changing, but the people that we work with, business, there's new ideas, there's new technology popping up every single day. And we have to understand how these different strategies apply to different unique sets of facts and circumstances.
Okay. So pretend you're at a seminar about charitable contribution deductions, and Michael L. Meyer is the speaker. He touts his credentials. He says he has an MBA and he's a licensed attorney. He seems totally credible.
Well, I don't have to pretend because I actually went to one of these seminars.
Really? Wow.
Yes. And I did not meet Michael Meyer, but I did meet two of the hosts, and they also had a very impressive list of accolades. They seemed very trustworthy, and they partnered with Michael Meyer on some of these strategies as the attorney to execute documents and actually implement some of the steps of these plans.
So Michael, or maybe one of his colleagues, tells you there's a way to get your clients their charitable tax deduction without the clients ever needing to actually surrender control of the asset they're donating. It just sounds so, I couldn't even think like that would be allowed. But what did you think when you heard it?
Well, it's definitely not allowed. Let's get that
right.
Straight. But that's every person's dream, right? Is that, gosh, you know, I would love to be that altruistic and live a life of poverty or a vow of poverty and surrender everything that I own so that I can support very generous organizations that do a lot of good in the world. But I really don't want to give up my lifestyle. And especially if I'm motivated to get the tax deduction from it, is there a way that I can accomplish both? Can I still maintain control and use of all my assets, but get that valuable tax deduction
right.
at the same time? And so, of course, being in the know about how these things work, when I hear something like that, that you can maintain control of your assets and get the immediate tax write-off, I'm skeptical.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So I want to know more about it. I don't just roll my eyes and walk away. I say, hey, I enjoy a good court case. Show me what you got. Let me see what the documentation is on this. Of course, I mentioned if you are going to claim a charitable contribution tax deduction, taxpayer has to completely relinquish dominion and control over that contributed property, and they're not allowed to retain enjoyment of the subject of the gift or otherwise expect any kind of substantial benefit in return. So a lot of times what we see with these strategies, and again, some of these are very legitimate, but you've got to follow the law to the letter of the law. Let's say you want to donate a piece of real estate, for example, that has appreciated in value, and perhaps you don't want to pay the capital gains tax on it. You might be incentivized to write off the value of that real estate by donating it. You can write off all of it or a portion of that value, but the law says once you donate that property, you don't get to use it anymore. You can't stop by your vacation property anymore just for old time's sake if you want to get the tax write-off.
But what Michael is claiming here is that he knows a secret way to get that write-off while still allowing the donor to use the donated item. And he purports that this method is totally legal. So it sounds on the surface like a win-win, right? You can see how this would be extremely appealing to high-income earners and their planners.
Yeah, and I have to say, when I saw this presentation myself, they were targeting wealthy benefactors of churches. And so the church, for example, would bring in these financial advisors to speak to their parishioners that they hoped would make them the benefactor of their wealth. And so because of that, you might find yourself in a room surrounded with people that you know, that you trust because it's in a religious setting, or there's this connection in common that is the religious element of it. And so that makes you feel more comfortable. You know, if you're in a room sitting with people that, whether you know them or not, if they're accomplished, successful people and they're not questioning the strategy, well, maybe I might be hesitant as a layperson to then question it. For me, I still have questions. Like, how does it work? How does it work in the ultimate tax plan, which is what they're presenting here? And so here's what they said. Michael would form an LLC for a client. The client then transfers money or other assets. It could be your business. It could be real estate. But you're transferring the title over to this LLC. And then what you do is 99% of the LLC is going to get donated to a charity. And in this case, it's Michael himself that's formed the charity. So that's another situation here, because it's not just some random charity. In a lot of these cases, it was a specially developed charity set up by the attorney himself.
Okay.
Now, when you donate the property to the charity, if you want the tax deduction for it, you've got to get that property appraised. Someone has to assign a monetary value to it, somebody that has the skill, reputation, and credentials to do that valuation so that you can deduct that value or a portion of that value from your taxable income. And that's what results in saving you tax. And so in this case, with the ultimate tax plan, Michael was also the appraiser.
And based on Michael's appraisal, the client would take a charitable deduction against their taxable income on their personal tax return. According to an article by Jay Atkinson on Forbes.com, quote, any income generated by the LLC would flow up to the charity, which, being tax exempt, did not pay any taxes on that income. So the client would get a double benefit. First, the charitable deduction for the client's donation of the LLC interest to the charity. And then second, avoid the taxable income generated by the LLC that the client would ordinarily have to pay.
Now, this is not so dissimilar from actually valid, legitimate charitable contributions or trusts that we use regularly in estate planning, in gift planning, in charitable planning. And so on the surface, it's easy to see why this just might look like another one of those opportunities there. But there's a few differences here with the Michael Meyer ultimate tax plan. Number one, he's purporting that the donor or the grantor of these assets is permitted to retain total control over those assets. And in fact, they can continue to benefit from owning those assets, meaning let's say someone contributes their business to one of these LLCs. Well, they would be permitted to continue to operate that business, to draw income from that business, and running that business as they previously had. It's just that they're able to benefit from that tax write-off right away. The other key here is this very small number of players. So we've got a lot of related parties in this scheme. And that's always a red flag because you should never be hesitant to bring in third parties to legitimize a transaction. If not legitimize it for the client's sake, legitimize it for the government's sake,
right,
so that everybody knows this is being on the up and up. And you'd really have to have collusion amongst the players in order to have it be fraudulent. And of course, that's why we see a lot of times in these schemes that they skip that step. They do not have arm's length transactions with unrelated parties. And so in this case, same thing. Michael, who's participating in this scheme, he's the appraiser, but he says, oh, but I never actually take control of these donated assets, even though on paper, it looks like you are distributing that asset and giving up control of it. So the ultimate tax plan forms showed that Michael's charities owned the donated assets, but in reality, his clients maintained control, and they did that by having non-voting or non-controlling shares of this LLC remain in possession of the taxpayer. So let's say, for example, you form the LLC, you've got 100 interests in that LLC, 99 would go to the charity. One interest remains with the taxpayer, but that one interest or 1%, even though it's a minority share, that's going to remain the only voting or controlling share in the whole setup. The 99% that goes over to the charity has non-voting rights. And that's where you can see on paper, look, you don't actually transfer control. There's not a full relinquishing of those assets that takes place here. And in taking it a step further, the court documents allege that after 3 years, the clients could actually buy back their assets at a significantly discounted price, sort of allowing this whole thing to start all over again.
If you take a step back, you'll see there's clearly so much wrong with this. For starters, what were these charities that Michael formed? Well, there were at least three. Michael started the National Endowment Association, Inc., Grace Heritage Corporation, and the Indiana Endowment Fund, Inc., and all of them were bogus. There was not any charity work actually going on in these organizations. According to the court documents, Michael was the only true officer and director of the charities. The charities had no employees besides, guess who? Michael. In fact, in 2012, 2015, and 2017, the IRS informed Michael that they were seeking to revoke the tax-exempt status for these charities. Michael responded by eventually signing a closing agreement with the IRS that said he used the charities as a tax planning strategy for charitable deductions, and they did not actually qualify for tax-exempt status.
Of course they didn't qualify because there are very specific rules. In order to be considered a tax-exempt organization, so in order to qualify to be a tax-exempt organization, the org must not be organized or operated for the benefit of private interests. No part of a Section 501c3 organization's net earnings may inure to the benefit of any private shareholder or individual. And all of that information has to be disclosed and publicly available so you can see what the beneficial purpose is of the organization, who it is that's primarily benefiting. There's very strict disclosure rules that must let the public know who the related parties are to that organization. So in the case of Michael Meyer, if he's getting a salary from that organization, or if one of his other business entities is benefiting from those entities, even if it's just a contracting agreement or something of that sort, it is publicly disclosed and declared. And that was not the case, obviously, with Michael's so-called charities, which were an integral part of this illegal tax shelter venture.
In addition to these bogus charities operating as abusive tax shelters, the other major red flag I'm seeing is that Michael himself was the one who appraised the value of these donations to these charities. This is not allowed. Whenever a non-cash charitable contribution is over $500, the IRS requires that a tax form, Form 8283, be submitted with the donor's tax return. But if the total non-cash charitable contribution is over $5,000, the organization receiving the donation has to fill out the appraisal form section. So does the appraiser. Now, Dom, do you want to read the statement that the appraiser actually needs to sign?
Yeah. So as of 2023, the version of the form says, I declare that I am not the donor. I'm not the donee. I'm not a party to the transaction in which the donor acquired the property. I'm not employed by, I'm not related to any of the foregoing persons. I'm not married to any person who is related to any of the foregoing persons. And if regularly used by the donor, the donee, or party to the transaction, I performed the majority of my appraisals during the tax year for other people. Also, I declare that I perform appraisals on a regular basis, and that because of my qualifications as described in the appraisal, I'm qualified to make appraisals of the type of property being valued. I certify that the appraisal fees were not based on a percentage of the appraised property value. Furthermore, I understand that a false or fraudulent overstatement of the property value, as described in the qualified appraisal or this form, may subject me to the penalty under Section 6701A, which is aiding and abetting the understatement of tax liability. I understand that my appraisal will be used in connection with a return or claim for refund. I also understand that if there is a substantial or gross valuation misstatement of the value of the property claimed on the return that is based on my appraisal, I may be subject to a penalty under Section 6695A of the Internal Revenue Code. That's a pretty serious disclosure that you are making and attesting to as an appraiser when you sign that Form 8283.
I mean, if we use this as a checklist of things not to do, let's get real, Michael Meyer would tick every box. He was definitely a party to the transaction. He did not perform appraisals on a regular basis. He actually was not qualified to make appraisals at all. And his appraisal fees were based on a percentage of the appraised property value.
Sure, sure.
Now, you might be wondering how Mr. Meyer made money off of this fraud. And that last sentence is how. He would always take a cut of the appraised value, a sum of which he totally made up. He wasn't a professional appraiser. His standard fee was 6% of net assets transferred to the charities up to, but not in excess of $1 million, plus 4% of net assets transferred, which exceed $1 million.
And he claimed to be a certified valuation expert, but that was a lie. That wasn't true. So not only did he not perform appraisals on a regular basis, he didn't even have the correct training and certification. That was false. There's just so many conflict of interests here to even count. Not only was he making a percentage of the completely fabricated value that he assigned to these donations, but he'd also charge an annual administration fee of $2,500. And while he was defrauding the United States, he was getting rich and living large, as we see in all these cases. He made over $10 million in total from selling the ultimate tax plan. And if we look at the press release on the justice.gov website, he, quote, purchased a multi-million dollar estate and owned a luxury vehicle collection that included Lamborghinis, Rolls Royces, Mercedes-Benzes, a Bentley, and a Ferrari. That's a dead giveaway that he was not a certified public accountant, Tom. Right there.
That's true.
He also used one of his bogus charity's assets as collateral so he could purchase a home for his ex-wife and a Lamborghini for himself. And some of his family members even received personal loans from his charities. So he wasn't just making money off of this deal. Because he was in charge of these charities that were bogus, he was using the assets that had been transferred into these charities through the LLC.
Yeah, and I don't see any of this money actually going to a charity, which is kind of ironic. It all went into 18 luxury cars and relatives' pockets. So,
right.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second here, because where is the paper trail of this so-called transfer? What's supposedly happening is they're forming this new LLC. In my example, out of 100 interests, 99 go to the charity. One remains with the owner, the founder, the donor, the grantor, right? But they're the one who has 100% control. They transfer the title of the assets into the name of the LLC, but they're not actually ever given to the charity, because if the charity doesn't have the right to distribute those assets, they never really gain ownership of those assets. And so that's what destroys the tax deduction part of this, aside from all of the things that we're looking at here. Now, you might be wondering about Michael's clients. Who were they? Did they know what was happening? Were they aware that what they were participating in was illegal? And that's not totally clear. It's tricky to know for sure.
Some probably absolutely knew. Some probably had no clue. Some people were probably wink, wink, nod, nod, whatever you say, right? It's the type of clients we all have, right? But Michael took actions that were so egregious. I can't imagine anyone not getting even a little suspicious.
Right. It's clear this story is far from over. The layers of deceit we've uncovered today are just the beginning. What lies beneath might change the way we see tax shelters forever.
Indeed, Dom. Next time, we're diving deeper into the abyss, unraveling the broader consequences of Meyer's scheme. We'll explore the fallout for the financial industry, the IRS's relentless pursuit of justice, and the personal stories of those who were caught in the crossfire.
And let me tell you, it's a tale of greed, manipulation, but also of resilience and the quest for redemption.
The web of deceit expands, and we're just getting started. Next week, we'll pull the curtain further, exposing these tax crimes. It is a journey you will not want to miss.
So until then, keep your deductions legal and your curiosity piqued. We're happy you decided to join us today, and we hope you consider subscribing to the show and even share it with some friends who could use a Tax Crime Junkie podcast in their life. Help us spread the word and come back for more.
We hope you'll join us again next week as we continue our mission to find the loopholes that went left open and close them for good. Until next time, remember that every crime is a trail that leads to the truth.